Good morning. It's Tuesday, April 16th. I'm Yasmin Khan, in for Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, the Supreme Court hears a case on the January 6th attack. 1 year of war has Sudan on the brink of collapse. And Salman Rushdie's return after escaping death. But first, let's take a brief look at some major stories in the news. The criminal trial for former President Trump continues today in New York with jury selection. Day one saw dozens of jurors dismissed. More than half the people in the first batch were excused yesterday after they said they couldn't be fair and impartial. Legal analyst Jessica Levinson told CBS that seating a jury may take some time because attorneys are wary of allowing someone in the jury box who could wreck their case.
We know that old saying that cases are rarely won at jury selection, but they sometimes are lost at jury selection.
Trump faces multiple felony charges of falsifying business records related to hush money payments to an adult film actress. He's pleaded not guilty. In Baltimore, searchers have found the body of another victim of the bridge collapse last month. Six construction workers were killed when a cargo ship hit the bridge. Two are still missing. There are multiple investigations into what happened, now including a federal criminal probe. And in sports, at the WNBA draft, the number one pick was no surprise.
The Indiana Fever select Caitlin Clark, University of Iowa.
The league already made moves to take advantage of the audience Clark has shown she can draw. The WNBA is putting nearly all of Indiana's games on national TV to maximize exposure. Other stars of March Madness were also drafted, including LSU's Angel Reese and Camila Cardoso of the NCAA champion South Carolina. They were both chosen by the Chicago Sky. Today, the Supreme Court is hearing arguments in a case that could impact hundreds of people who were criminally charged for attacking the Capitol on January 6th. Specifically, at question is whether prosecutors improperly stretched a law used to charge insurgents with obstruction for delaying the certification of the 2020 election results. Anne Marimo is a Supreme Court correspondent for The Washington Post, and she gave us the backstory on the 2002 law that's under scrutiny.
This followed the collapse of the energy giant Enron and the exposure of massive fraud, including the shredding of documents that investigators were going to be seeking. And this is an obstruction statute that makes it a crime to obstruct, influence, or impede an official proceeding or attempts to do so.
The charge carries a maximum sentence of 20 years. And so far, more than 100 people involved in the January 6th attack have been convicted and sentenced under it for obstruction. A ruling from the Supreme Court against prosecutors who've used the obstruction statute could impact those convictions and pending cases. The ruling could also affect the federal election interference case against Trump. He's denied the charges, two of which are based on the obstruction law in question. Marimo says Trump would likely move to have those charges dismissed if the Supreme Court rules that prosecutors have overreached with this statute. But the prosecution in Trump's case could adjust if that happens.
Special Counsel Jack Smith says this is different. President Trump is not accused of storming the Capitol himself and disrupting this official proceeding, but the charges against him include evidence of trying to, for instance, submit a slate of fake electors, which could be considered more tangible evidence. So he says the facts alleged against the former president are different and could still hold up despite whatever the Supreme Court rules.
Lower courts have nearly all ruled in favor of prosecutors using the obstruction charge in January 6 cases. A Supreme Court ruling could come in late June. And one quick thing about the court. Legal watchers took note that Justice Clarence Thomas missed yesterday's arguments on other matters. Chief Justice John Roberts said Thomas would still participate by looking at legal briefs and transcripts. Roberts gave no explanation for Thomas's absence. It wasn't clear if Thomas was coming to the session today. After 1 year of civil war in Sudan, aid agencies are warning that humanitarian conditions for civilians are on the brink of collapse. More than 8 million people have been forced from their homes. It's the largest displacement in the world. Thousands have been killed by the fighting, a quarter of them under the age of 5. The UN says 25 million people need humanitarian support, and there could be unprecedented levels of starvation.
Today, half of Sudan's people need emergency assistance. We cannot let this nightmare slide from view.
That's UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres addressing a conference in France on increasing aid to Sudan. Aid workers say the fighting is making it hard to get vital supplies in.
Aid convoys have been targeted. Humanitarian personnel and warehouses have been attacked. Women and girls are subject to rampant sexual violence.
The death toll in the fighting between forces loyal to rival generals is estimated at 14,000, but the true total could be much higher. Very few aid workers and journalists have been able to get into the hardest-hit areas to see what's actually going on. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus is the Director General of the World Health Organization. He says the fighting has also led to a collapse of the medical system.
Almost 15 million people need health assistance. Acute and chronic malnutrition are rampant. The health system is under attack. Officially, WHO has verified 62 attacks on healthcare, but this is just the tip of the iceberg because there is underreporting.
The UN conference in France aimed to secure close to $3 billion in pledges for food and healthcare support from dozens of countries. Ultimately, over $2 billion was pledged. Human rights experts and health workers have been calling on world leaders to put more attention and resources into addressing this crisis and working to secure a ceasefire. Finally, the author Salman Rushdie has a new book out today that reflects on a moment he almost lost his life. In 2022, the author was stabbed multiple times at a public event in New York. Many years before, he'd been in hiding at certain points. He had death threats because of what's known as a fatwa from Iran, a religious order calling for his killing. It came in response to his 1988 novel, The Satanic Verses. Rushdie gave his first TV interview since the attack to 60 Minutes. At one point, he and Anderson Cooper sat in silence for 27 seconds. The length of the stabbing attack.
That's quite a long time. That's the extraordinary half minute of intimacy in which life meets death.
His new memoir is called Knife, Meditations After an Attempted Murder. In it, Rushdie writes about that day and how his survival feels miraculous.
I mean, I certainly don't feel that some hand reached down from the skies and guarded me, but I do think something happened which wasn't supposed to happen, and I have no explanation for it.
Rushdie said he was still grappling with how to account for something that feels like a miracle when he doesn't quite believe in miracles. He's still dealing with the trauma of the attack and with his injuries. He lost his right eye. At first, he didn't want to write about the experience and have it define him. But Rushdie said that his knife and his way to fight back is his writing.
Language is a way of breaking open the world. I don't have any other weapons, but I've been using this particular tool for quite a long time. So I thought this was my way of dealing with it.
You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the news app right now, a narrated article is coming up next. The Atlantic reports on how cows are suffering on organic dairy farms, even though they're thought by some to offer more humane conditions. If you're listening in the podcasts app, follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.